You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Eagle Ford Shale in South Texas covers 26 counties and 20,000 square miles, which makes it one of the most active hydraulic fracturing sites in North America. All that drilling has transformed whole communities in southern Texas and adversely affected their air quality. Jim Morris is a senior reporter and editor with the Center for Public Integrity, which teamed up with Inside Climate News and the Weather Channel for their report, Big Oil, Bad Air. And I'm pleased that it brings Jim Morris to our show today. Hello.
Thanks very much for having me.
We've heard a lot in the national media about Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale and the back end in North Dakota. Why has hydraulic fracturing in southern Texas received less national media attention?
Yeah, that was a puzzle for us as well. I think a couple of things. It's although it's one of the biggest oil and gas plays in the world, one of the biggest shale plays in the world, it's in a part of Texas that is mostly rural. It's generally poorer than the rest of the state. It's not near any major cities. The nearest big city is San Antonio, and that's still 60 miles or so from the edge of the play. So I think that's part of it. The people down there are not prone to complaining. They're not prone to organizing. They are not, you know, environmental activists all over the Eagle Ford complaining about the situation. So I think those are some of the reasons it's not been on the national radar.
Well, wells are being drilled, but there's a whole processing infrastructure that needs to accompany them. So I'm assuming that's actually bringing people to the area and creating jobs. What is being built there?
Well, I mean, so far there are almost 8,000 wells that have been sunk into the Eagle Ford, concentrated in three or four counties in particular. There are another 5,000 or so planned that have already been permitted, so that'll be, you know, 13,000 wells in the very near future. And then there are countless, you know, processing plants, pipelines, compressor stations. It's just a fairly amazing thing to see, considering this area had, you know, very little activity just a few years ago.
How does it compare with the national output? How much oil and gas is now being produced in this part of Texas?
I believe I saw something just today that indicated it's up to about 100,000 barrels a day of oil just from the Eagle Ford. And I don't know offhand how that compares to the Bakken. I think it may have just surpassed the Bakken, but sure about that.
And you say not a lot of people live near the drilling sites. But given the scale of the oil and gas produced there, it's unavoidable that some people aren't living near it.
Oh, yeah, there are definitely some people living near it. It's just these are mostly folks who live in small towns or on farms or on ranches in South Texas. And, when they were drilling up near Dallas-Fort Worth in the Barnett Shale beginning about 10 years ago, they were literally drilling in the suburbs. They were drilling near people's homes and schools, and people got upset very quickly and began to organize and began to demand some changes, which they got, at least some changes. But these people are sort of scattered here and there in South Texas, and they're definitely feeling the impacts, but they're not. Again, they're not in the suburbs like the people in North Texas.
And you note that many of these facilities release tons of volatile organic compounds. What kinds of things are we talking about, and how dangerous are they to human health?
We're talking about a wide variety of chemicals, from benzene, which has been linked to leukemia, to formaldehyde, which is another carcinogen, to sulfur dioxide, which is a severe respiratory irritant. And then the Eagle Ford people at Eagle Ford have an added sort of layer of risk, and that's a chemical called hydrogen sulfide, which is a naturally occurring gas that is generally not a problem if you leave it alone. But when you start punching holes in the earth, like they're doing, you can release this stuff, and in high enough concentrations, it can kill you, and in fact has killed a number of workers over the years.
It's also known as sour gas because of its smell?
Also known as sour gas, has a very distinctive rotten egg smell that people smell at very low levels. So apart from being a threat an immediate threat to people's lives, mostly workers. It's a chronic health problem. Even in very, very tiny amounts, well below a part per million, it can cause nausea, headaches. It can make asthma attacks a lot worse. It's both a chronic and an acute hazard.
And we don't see as much of this in other shale, other fracking sites?
It's right. It's present, for example, in North Dakota in the Bakken, but it is not present, at least in any major quantity, in say the Marcellus in Pennsylvania. So, like I say, nor is it present in the Barnett in North Texas, for that matter. There are well-mapped fields of hydrogen sulfide around the country. There's one in California. There are others, but this one is especially rich in this chemical.
Did you worry for your own health when you were traveling around these sites?
Oh, not too much. I mean, you see the poison gas signs up on pretty much every fence that surrounds either a processing plant or a well or a compressor station. I mean, they're just always there because this stuff is so ubiquitous. But no, I think the people who really have to worry the most are the workers. And in fact, people have died from this stuff.
Well, how do these compounds behave when they're released into the air? Do they disperse to safe levels?
It really depends on the direction of the wind, the speed of the wind, just the atmospheric conditions in general. A number of people we interviewed who live very close to drilling in Karnes County, Texas, some days are not so bad and some days are horrendous. Some days the odors invade their homes and they literally can't breathe. And other days when the wind shifts, it's not so bad. So it's just very much almost a minute-by-minute situation.
One family that you mentioned in your story lived near a fracking site, the Leeses. They had 5 dogs die in a very short time. So dogs are vulnerable because they're smaller?
I don't know. These were big dogs. These were Great Pyrenees, I think. And it was a mystery, but they died, apparently excruciating deaths, and one right after the other, and they actually lost the 6th dog some months later, and they were unable to afford, a necropsy at the vet's office, so I don't know that they'll ever know for sure what happened, but it is awfully coincidental that these animals died after the emissions started coming.
My guest is Jim Morris, who is a senior reporter and editor with the Center for Public Integrity, which teamed up with Inside Climate News and the Weather Channel for a report called Big Oil, Bad Air. Most of the discussion about the environmental impacts of fracking has been about water safety. Why do you think air quality hasn't been as important of an issue until now?
It's hard. It's hard to sort of get your hands around. I mean, we're talking about air. We're talking about emissions that can be very, it can be fleeting. People are just now, scientists are just now starting to study this issue. There's some people who've done some work in Pennsylvania. There's some work being done in Colorado. So people are sort of waking up to this as perhaps a bigger threat than contaminated water. Not that contaminated water is not a concern. Of course it is. But we chose to look at air because we felt it had not been properly addressed.
Well, the chemicals being used in the water have been kept as trade secrets. Can the emissions from the drilling sites give a clue as to what's being put into the ground?
I would suppose so. Again, we didn't spend a lot of time on water, but I would guess that if chemicals like benzene and formaldehyde are getting out into the air, which we know they are, that you'd have to worry about, say, benzene in the water as well.
Your investigation found that only 5 permanent air monitors are installed in the 20,000 square mile region that we're talking about, and all are far away from the heavy drilling areas where emissions are highest. Why is that?
Well, that's a very good question, and we never got a good answer. The agency that is responsible for enforcing air pollution laws in Texas is called the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. And I don't know that we ever got a good answer to that. They feel it's sufficient. They say they do spot checks, on the air, flyovers and infrared cameras and all that, which they have done. But we don't know. The experts we spoke with, and we spoke to many, said that that's just completely inadequate for an area that's essentially twice the size of Massachusetts. That's how big this area is.
Do companies need to file their emissions data with the state of Texas?
They do file emissions data with the state of Texas, and some of that is fairly alarming, too. We used one example that I think is especially striking. One of the families we profiled, the Burings, are surrounded by 50-plus wells and 9 processing plants, I think within a 2.5-mile radius. And 6 of those processing plants don't even have to report their emissions to the state, so we don't know what they're putting out. But the 3 that do collectively put out more volatile organic compounds than a large oil refinery in Houston.
No. Go ahead.
Pardon me? That's just a point of reference. So it would be like taking an oil refinery and, you know, picking it up and dropping it in the middle of a rural area.
And why do some of them not have to report?
Because they're considered small and, and I put quotes around the word small. You know, they're considered smaller operations that, you know, in theory don't put out, more than 25 tons a year of volatile organics. That's open to debate. So there are thousands of facilities in the state of Texas that do not have to report their emissions.
But everybody knows they're occurring. One resident described a rancid chicken stench, which
seems
unusual and alarmingly specific.
It is, yeah. And, you know, we reviewed almost 300 complaints that were filed with the state by residents of this area. And the vast majority of those complaints talk about, you know, air emissions, talk about rotten egg odors, and, you know, as you mentioned, you know, very specific descriptions of health effects and odors and just everything. I mean, these are not just, some of these are pages long, some of these complaints. They're very specific. And so for the state to say, as it has, that there's really nothing to worry about health-wise in that area, it just seems sort of silly.
Well, can they filter the air that they're venting?
I'm sorry, who?
Can filters be put on the vents so that the air that comes out is a little cleaner?
Do you mean from the facilities?
Yeah.
The facilities? I'm sure there is control technology available, and it's just a matter of you know, the state making them use it or making them use it properly. One thing we haven't talked about yet, you had asked me if we know what's coming out of some of these facilities, and we do. These are the so-called routine emissions, the stuff that they're permitted or allowed to release. What I didn't mention is unplanned releases, which are called emission events, kind of a euphemism. And those are, you know, supposedly accidental releases. And some of those can lead to much more severe air pollution than the sort of routine stuff. So you have to add that. You have to put that on top of what we know is coming out through routine emissions.
And you're right that there has been a 100% increase in unplanned toxic air releases since 2009. What causes those errors?
A lot of it is human error. A lot of it is faulty equipment. When the state goes in and investigates afterwards, which it sometimes does, not always, they'll find a broken piece of equipment or something that wasn't properly maintained. So, I mean, that just happens all the time. And those events are up 100% in the last few years.
Now, we talked about smells. Can we also see any of these emissions? Do they have colors?
Sometimes there's a sort of a yellow haze. Again, a lot of this depends on the meteorological conditions. You know, it's periods of low wind or when the wind is from the south, which it often is, you'll just see sort of a yellow haze over the landscape, which you would not have seen 5 years ago. And you'll also see when you've got a flare, and there are, I don't know how many thousands of flares just in Karnes County, you'll see, you know, plumes of black smoke coming off some of the flares. And when people say, when you see the black smoke, that's when the really bad stuff is getting out. You're not supposed to see black smoke, but you often do.
My guest is Jim Morris. His report, Big Oil, Bad Air, was prepared for the Center for Public Integrity, where he is a senior reporter and an editor. That center teamed up with Inside Climate News and the Weather Channel to prepare that report, and we will continue. By the way, we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org if you want all of the scary details. But we'll come back with some more of the scary details after we take a little break, so stay with us. And we are back with Jim Morris, who is a senior reporter and editor with the Center for Public Integrity. They teamed up with Inside Climate News and Weather Channel for their report, Big Oil, Bad Air. And we were wondering whether the industry prefers doing business in Texas over some of the other states.
I think that's. I think there's a strong likelihood that that's the case because I think what we found is there's very much a hands-off attitude in Texas. Not that there isn't in other states as well. We didn't, you know, investigate in any detail what's going on in other states. But certainly in Texas, the industry has very little to fear from the regulators.
Well, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality doesn't even know if some of the fracking wells you investigated exist. How is that possible? Don't they have to register them?
No. In some cases, no. It's what we call an honor system. And again, these are supposedly small facilities that put out, you know, relatively little air pollution. And you know, unless they blow up or have a huge release, in some cases, the state may well not know they exist, let alone what they're emitting.
Well, drilling permits in Texas are approved by the Railroad Commission, aren't they?
Correct.
Why is that?
Correct. Oh, you know, I don't know the history of that, but the Railroad Commission has regulated oil and gas drilling in Texas for, you know, however long there's been drilling in Texas, basically. So that's another problem down there. There's sort of a split responsibility between the two agencies. So all aspects of drilling the well are regulated by the Railroad Commission, as you mentioned. But once the well is drilled and these other facilities are installed, then in terms of regulating air pollution, that falls on the TCEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality.
Do we know if the Railroad Commission has ever not approved a permit to drill?
The Railroad Commission, we did a little analysis, has approved just under 200,000 drilling permits statewide in the last 10 years or so, and has denied about 600. And I forget what the math is, but it would be a fraction of a percent that they've denied. So the answer is almost never.
Now, what about the Federal Clean Air Act? Does it address any of the problems that are being faced around the Eagle Ford Shale?
It addresses some of the problems, but what some people, I think, maybe many people don't understand is that enforcement of the Clean Air Act is delegated to the states. So, you know, in this case, the state of Texas is the agency that is the state. TCEQ is the agency that is supposed to be enforcing the Federal Clean Air Act. And the EPA relies heavily on the states to do that. So it's very much a case-by-case basis. If you've got an aggressive state like, you know, California, for example, they probably do a fairly decent job. If you've got a state like Texas that is very industry-friendly, they probably don't do such a great job.
Has there been much monitoring of air quality in southern Texas?
There's been very little monitoring of air quality in southern Texas. As we mentioned earlier, there are only five monitors in a 20,000 square mile area, and they're conveniently not placed in the areas of heaviest drilling.
So has anyone ever been fined?
Rarely. We looked at 284 complaints that were filed by residents of this part of South Texas, and found that those complaints resulted in 164 violations. So that, you know, when the state investigated, it did find violations, but we found only two fines. So 164 violations, two fines.
And how much did they have to pay for the violations?
Oh, I think the biggest one was $14,000, and which is nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these oil companies, you know, these are some of the biggest in the country. Marathon Oil is a big operator, ConocoPhillips, and so on. So, you know, a fine of $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 isn't going to even, you know, it's not going to do anything.
And then, as you point out, since the start of the oil boom, the Texas legislature has cut the budget of the state's Commission on Environmental Quality by a third.
That's what's really interesting. The timing of that is most interesting because the cutting of the TCEQ's budget just almost perfectly mirrors the Eagle Ford boom, because the Eagle Ford boom started around 2008, although it didn't really get going until about 2010 or 2011. And then again, just coincidentally or not, that is the same period when the Environmental Enforcement Agency in Texas saw its budget cut by a third.
Well, you mentioned that nearly 300 complaints have been filed by Eagle Ford residents since 2010. How many of those have resulted in investigations?
Well, I think they all were investigated in one way or another. I mean, that's another issue. Sometimes it takes the state investigators days or even weeks to get out to these places and investigate someone's complaint. And obviously, if you've got a situation where you've got a cloud of some toxic stuff sitting over your house, by the time the investigator gets out there, you know, 2 days later, 4 days later, a week later, it is probably going to be gone. And it's not a very efficient way to do it. It's very much a sort of a reactive way to investigate these things. So they do investigate, but it often doesn't lead to anything.
Haven't some scientists linked the recent earthquakes in Oklahoma to fracking there? Are there any earthquakes around the Eagle Ford Shale?
I believe there have been, although we really didn't look into that in any detail, but I believe there have been, yes.
Is it your sense that scientists and public health officials have a handle on how oil and gas drilling affects the people who live near it?
No, I don't think they have a handle. I think they're starting to get a handle on it. There are, you know, finally now some scientists around the country who are starting to look at health effects specifically from air emissions in fracking areas in Colorado and Pennsylvania and elsewhere. But it's something that the industry has gotten way out ahead of the sort of public health. The Eagle Ford is just going crazy right now. And as I mentioned, we'll soon have about 13,000 wells sunk into the ground there. And it's just happening so fast that I don't, you know, it's just not enough time for researchers to catch up.
And you mentioned earlier that the operators work on the honor system. What does that mean?
Well, some do. I mean, the smaller.
Again, I mean, they're expected to work on the honor system. That's what Texas law allows.
Well, when I said honor system, I meant these so-called permits by rule, which are, again, the permits that are really not permits at all, but just basically you swear that, you know, your emissions are below a certain threshold, and therefore you don't have to do all sorts of things that bigger facilities have to do. So that's what I meant by honor system.
Now, we have been hearing in other areas about pressure being put on landowners to sell their mineral rights. Some are very happy to do it. Others resist. What's been the situation in Texas?
One of the families we profiled, Fred and Amber Lissy, who run an organic farm in Wilson County, Texas, which is in the Eagle Ford, northern edge of the Eagle Ford play. And they run a 564-acre family operation, goats, cattle, other animals. And, you know, again, they sell organic. Their selling point is that these are organically raised animals. They have been under intense pressure in the last couple of years, they say, to lease some of their land to oil companies, and so far have said no. But their neighbors have, so they've got a big flare just beyond their property line that has been tormenting them. And you know, they say the pressure has just been relentless, but so far they've held out.
Did the resident you spoke to who have allowed the drilling see this as the health consequences and possibility of earthquakes as an acceptable trade-off for the economic benefits and the economic growth of the area?
Yeah, you know, there was another family, the Jonases, that we interviewed who were, you know, had in fact leased some of their property and were reaping the benefits, and they wouldn't tell us how much, but they clearly were making good money through royalties. And, you know, we asked them, well, don't you worry about your health? Because the woman in the family described some just intense odors that would drift into their property from a flare. And she said, "Yeah, you know, I guess I'm a little worried about it, but you know, we've been farming this land for however many years, and we had a lot of rough years where there was drought. We just couldn't make it, and so this was a, you know, a blessing for us, and so we're just going to take our chances." And I think the oil companies count on that. I think they count on that sort of attitude that, you know, it probably is going to be okay, so go ahead and sign this lease here.
I'm speaking with Jim Morris of the Center for Public Integrity about fracking in the Eagle Ford Shale in Texas, one of the most productive energy fields in the country, also one of the largest. Well, have people been made rich by selling their mineral rights? Do they have to give up farming? Does it have an effect on the farming on the surface above?
Some people have, I'm sure, gotten rich or become quite wealthy. But interestingly enough, even people who have leased their property, we talked to one woman who was actually not quoted in the series, but who leased, I think, 4 acres. She has 25 acres. She leased 4 acres to a major oil company. And so we asked her, "Well, so you're set now, right? You know, you're gonna have money just rolling in." She said, "No, not really." She said, "I really have started to regret it because they gave me an initial payment of $7,000, and then they told her to expect royalties of about $9,000 a year. And then for that, she has to live with these emissions and the noise and all the stuff that goes with this drilling activity." And she says today, she says, "I really regret it. I'm sorry I made that deal."
What about the people who are working at these wells? Do they pay well? Do they get health insurance?
I don't know about health insurance. I sort of doubt it, at least with the smaller operators. Yeah, I mean, I suppose it pays well. There are just thousands and thousands of workers coming into the region from outside of South Texas. But it's an extremely dangerous business. And there are, you know, countless deaths and injuries and illnesses. We talked to a couple of workers, and it's rough work. I mean, if there's nothing else, that's what you do. But it's not pleasant work, and there's a very high probability of getting hurt.
Why? Why is it dangerous? Are there explosions, or is it what you're breathing in?
There are people. Well, it's not just that. It's hydrogen sulfide, which is the chemical I mentioned earlier that can kill you in sufficient concentrations or make you very sick. There are, you know, all sorts of accidents where people get limbs crushed, or, you know, they're well blowouts. It's just a very, very dangerous industry. It always has been. That's not new. What's new is just the size of this thing and the pace with which they're drilling and putting the infrastructure in it just increases the pressure on the workers to, you know, to get something done and maybe cut corners. That is an area we want to look into more deeply in the future.
Now, in the development of the Marcellus Shale, certain towns have passed laws to regulate fracking, and Dallas actually has done it in Texas. What about the towns in the Eagle Ford Shale?
There's really nothing. Really nothing has been done by the little towns in the Eagle Ford Shale, like Karn City, where we spent a lot of time. As you point out, Dallas just passed a what's called a setback rule of 1,500 feet. You can't drill a well within, you know, 1,500 feet of a school or a home or a hospital or a church, any place where people might be. And but there's nothing like that in the Eagle Ford that we were able to find. These small communities are just, you know, have sort of bought into the industry's message that this is a windfall. You don't want to do anything to interrupt it. You know, just trust us. We'll take care of you. Your tax base will grow, and you'll be able to build new schools and parks and so forth. So they, as far as we can tell, haven't done anything.
How long is the shale expected to be productive?
You hear different things. I think it will go on for 10-plus years. I mean, some say decades. It's hard to say, but it is not going to end, you know, 5 years from now, or probably not even 10 years from now.
Now, have you gotten any feedback from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality or the Texas Legislature or Rick Perry's office as a result of this report, Big Oil, Bad Air?
We have gotten no direct feedback from either the agency or the governor's office or any of the politicians we highlighted in our stories, which I suppose isn't surprising. I should point out that we tried multiple times. We made a total of 8 trips between us and the Weather Channel and Inside Climate News, made a total of 8 trips down to South Texas between last June and then January last month, and made multiple requests to the state regulators as well as industry people to set up face-to-face meetings, to go on camera in the case of the Weather Channel, to meet us in the field and show us how they operate, and every one of them, you know, basically turned us down.
We have heard about revolving doors in other industries. Do people from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality wind up working for the gas and oil industry, or wind up working as lobbyists?
Yeah, I mean, one of their former executive directors, for example, Jeffrey Sadis, I believe it's pronounced, is now an industry lobbyist. And then, you know, as we pointed out, about a quarter of the Texas legislature, the current members of the Texas legislature or their spouses, have direct financial interests in companies that are drilling in the Eagle Ford. They either have stock or they get royalties from companies that are active right now in the Eagle Ford. So it's hard to imagine how they could be sort of impartial judges of you know, how this industry should be regulated.
Now, is the Eagle Ford a special case because of some of the gases, the hydrogen sulfide, that escapes as a result of the drilling? Or should we assume that similar things might happen if drilling were done in another shale?
Well, I think some of the basic compounds, that, you know, the benzene and the sulfur dioxide and some of that stuff, I think you would find that pretty much anywhere, whether it's upstate New York or Pennsylvania or Texas. Those, I think, are sort of a given, although some places, and I'm thinking of Colorado in particular, are trying to crack down on those emissions. So you've got that as a baseline, and then in some places, as I say, and I honestly don't know if New York is one of them, but in some states, you have these vast fields of hydrogen sulfide, and so you've got that as kind of an added layer of risk.
And it usually, the hydrogen sulfide is usually present when you're getting oil and gas?
Yeah, I mean, it's just naturally occurring. It's there. And if you don't tap into it, it's fine. I mean, you know, if you don't start drilling into the rock, you're not going to release it. So the fact that it's present by itself is not a problem until you start, again, punching holes in the ground. And that is when you unleash it, and that's when you have to control it, or people will get killed or people will get sick.
Can public health officials conclusively link the kinds of health problems we're talking about with well site emissions?
Well, I think that's what they're working on now. There certainly is a lot of scientific literature that describes the health effects of hydrogen sulfide, that describes the health effects of benzene, sulfur dioxide, et cetera. But in terms of specifically linking health effects to fracking, that's the sort of work that's being done right now on sort of a catch-up basis.
Jim Morris is a senior reporter and editor with the Center for Public Integrity. The report, Bad Oil, Bad Air, was also produced in cooperation with Inside Climate News and the Weather Channel. And Jim, thank you so much for this eye-opening conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me.